Chapter 12. The next day, Tony awoke to find his head still crowded with a paranoia that only grew as the day went on, exacerbated as much by his inability to know who or what he was up against as by the numbing tedium of the day's events. Each morning, he reported to the dam with Orlando, and each morning he made his way to Pershing's office, where he sat, awkwardly, for an hour, while Pershing worked, Tony waited, and Orlando disappeared to stalk the grounds, for what, Tony did not know. He had a chance to look for him when, polite, but annoyed by this invasion of his privacy, Pershing suggested that Tony might enjoy making himself acquainted with the dam's facilities, so long as he did not stray into any areas marked off-limits, of course. But never found anything. It was like the man had disappeared. For hours and hours, he walked the grounds of the facility, which, while beautiful and perfectly organized, was much smaller than could keep him entertained. The areas most important to the running of the system were off-limits, after all. While he had the proper clearance to be on the premises, the lack of actual role to play in work was impossible to understand, and so his inquiries about help were always politely rebuffed. Similarly, any investigation he tried to follow on the employees here was useless. The generous, attentive men and women of yesterday seemed to have been replaced overnight by busy, focused workers who could barely spare him a glance. Not that he much blamed them. Their tasks involved hundreds of millions of dollars of delicate equipment and required almost minute-to-minute attention. It would hardly do to have them entertaining Tony's bored self, even if he was an expert, intimately familiar with much of what they were working on. He was an outsider, brought here for no real end they had been let in on. Those that weren't aligned with Orlando's handlers most likely considered his skulking around the base to be some badly handled, anonymous performance review, while whoever it was that was aligned with Orlando's outfit was keeping a glancing eye on him, eager to run to Orlando the second Tony tipped his hand. One false move, and that would be that. And so, paralyzed, Tony opted to lay low. It was possible he should call Pickett, he thought, yes, but also as likely that a call to Pickett was exactly what Orlando was waiting on, the last thing needed to confirm his suspicion that one or both of the two were a liability worth getting rid of. So he waited. He had encountered moments in his career where no matter how bad the situation was, no matter how much action seemed to be called for by immediate circumstances, a bombing run on your position, a guerrilla raid, an explosion on base, the proper response was to stop and take stock and wait until you had exactly enough information to act on. What that information was and how he would get it was not apparent, but then it was often the case that you had to wait for the answer to come to you. In times like this, times of inaction, Tony found it most helpful to surround himself with nature, and here there was no better place for that experience than the top of the dam, where he could watch, as on one side, those countless thousands of gallons of water and force crashed down with an elemental fury, only to then turn away and around to behold the placid reservoir behind him, a study in perfect contrast. To be here, at the spatial center of this conspiracy, reminded him that this wasn't an abstract danger or some boardroom conspiracy, but a real enterprise, with deep potential costs for nature and man alike. It also paradoxically calmed him. As much time as he spent concerning himself with people's connection to water, he often forgot that for all they had done to harness these forces, their efforts would one day all be gone. Whether in a single night at the hands of some natural disaster, not even this marvel of engineering could withstand, or after decades, centuries of neglect, the walls of this dam and reservoir would crumble, and the waters would resume their original path. To know that, whatever happened in the scheming of mice and men, the forces of nature worked on a geological scale that would ignore them all, brought Tony a slight zen. Watching, as the falls cascaded down, he found it almost impossible not to imagine himself tumbling down them, not down to his death, but just riding the waters, giving himself over to their force fully. It wasn't that he had found a way to absolve himself of responsibility for any possible failure. Rather, this understanding helped Tony better see that this seemingly insurmountable conspiracy was itself just another long-form project meant to contain the forces of nature, albeit a destructive, shady one, unsupported by the social contracts that made possible something like a dam built for the public good. There was a way to beat this, he knew, some wave too big to be contained by these cloak-and-dagger machinations. He simply had to wait until the wave presented itself, and he could ride it. Tony glimpsed what he thought were the first signs of a swelling white cap on his third day at the dam. The first half of the day had passed as normal, with Tony making his morning rounds to no avail, before excusing himself to the dam for a round of his impromptu meditation. The paranoia that his meditation helped beat back was getting harder and harder to keep down, and so he made every excuse to see himself up to this overlook that he could. He was in the middle of just such a reverie when, staring out over the front of the dam, watching its runoff, he noticed through the spray of water a figure out on the maintenance ledge, crouched over and fiddling with what Tony could not at first see. It took the better part of a minute for his vision to adjust and pierce through the haze and mist of that ceaseless spray to see the figure belonged to Orlando, and that he was priming some device that Tony's every instinct and training told him was a bomb. Immediately, Tony's internal alarms triggered, sending up a cacophony of concern in his head. He had to try his hardest to beat back. While his first instinct was to run and inform Pershing and other staff here at once, he had no way of knowing if that would produce the result he wanted. For one, he did not actually have proof that Orlando was setting explosives. If he tipped his hand now and falsely accused the man, he might be signing his death warrant, distinguishing himself as too much trouble to bother with. For another, he had no way of knowing that his report would end up in the right ear. He could tell Pershing, yes, but Pershing's position made it more, not less, likely that he had some connection to the plot. Instead, he decided, the best thing to do would be to call Pickett, check in to see if he had heard anything from the higher-ups about Orlando's role here. Besides, Orlando's preoccupation with his task ensured that Tony had at least some time to put in a phone call, the one thing he had dreaded doing during this escapade, because he had never known who was listening, if Orlando wasn't simply hiding around the next corner, spying on him. Swiftly, on deft feet, Tony made his way to the employee break room, an inauspicious affair that looked like it had been untouched in 30 years of renovations to the premises. The yellow-white refrigerator, the fire engine red landline phone hanging from the wall, the Formica countertop and cheap folding tables, complete with cheap folding chairs that wouldn't have been out of place at a bake sale, all of it comically, intentionally, opposed to the modernization observable elsewhere in the dam. To his great surprise, and good fortune, there was nobody there when he arrived, guaranteeing him at least enough time to get in a call with Pickett. Trying to maintain calm, but finding himself fumbling as he pulled the number Pickett had given him from his pocket, Tony pecked nervously at the landline hanging on the break room wall. "Come on, come on," he muttered to himself as it rang once, twice, three, four, five times, without any response from the other line. By the seventh ring, he was on the verge of cursing when someone picked up. It was another 10 seconds before his receiver responded, though, leaving Tony with what felt like a lifetime to contend with his nerves before Pickett spoke.
"Good to hear from you, Rodriguez," he wheezed, leading Tony to wonder if he was taking this call in private and had been forced to remove himself from his office. "I was worried you might have bought the farm by now."
A laugh followed, one that Tony sensed was equal parts relieved and trepidatious. For a moment, he had to wonder if Pickett's only real interest in Tony was making sure that Orlando spared the colonel a few days of breathing room.
"We aren't all so lucky as Mr. Early," he shot back, but Pickett missed the bitterness in his voice
and a pointed sarcasm to go right on laughing.
Well, I'm glad at least one of us can keep a sense of humor about this. So tell me, how are you liking the dam? Are your accommodations to your liking? Have your hosts been forthcoming? Have you found anything that might be of use to us?
Picket, Tony said sharply, cutting to the quick of it. Did Orlando mention anything about a bomb to you? Picket must have seized up, because it was another 10 seconds before he responded.
What did you see, Rodriguez?
I'm not sure exactly what it was, but I noticed him affixing something suspicious to the wall along the dam's maintenance walk, which would be the very outer surface of the construction, one of the points most responsible for holding the whole thing together.
Jesus,
Pickett muttered, more to himself than Tony, before continuing on in near panic.
Please, Rodriguez, you've got to confirm what that was. I've heard nothing on my end about any plan to bomb any of the dams, but...
You said dams just now, as in multiple dams.
What, you didn't think this was a contained operation, did you?
Tony shook his head reflexively. He'd known from the minute he'd been assigned here that this plan couldn't be confined to one dam, but it wasn't a suspicion he found it encouraging to confirm. Fuck, Pickett, how deep does this go, and how far in have you put me?
I'm telling you, I only know so much, but I can't imagine they're planning to bomb a dam. That would be...
Before he could hear the rest, though, a siren filled Tony's ears, filled the entirety of the dam. Somebody had pulled the fire alarm. Before Tony could react, though, before he could run, he felt a hand grip his shoulder with the same assured strength he'd felt when Orlando grabbed him in the rabbit hole, as another hand gently but firmly took the phone from him and placed it back on the wall. How long he had been listening, and how he had known where to find Tony, the man could not guess, though judging by Orlando's brazenness and self-assurance, Tony had little doubt he had heard enough of the conversation between Tony and Pickett to damn the both of them. For just a moment, Tony felt the pendulum of his fortune swinging back and forth, felt it freeze in mid-swing, as if hung between two decisions. Then a second later, felt his suspicions confirmed when a small but sharp sensation pressed into the small of his back. It was a sensation Tony hadn't felt in years, but one he would not, could not, ever forget. There likely wasn't a man alive who could walk away from having a gun pressed against his lower spine and just push it to the back of his mind. Immediately, his mind seized up, his heart sank, and Tony felt a torrent of adrenaline flood through every inch of his body. He wanted to turn around and fight, to run, but knew that this would almost certainly result in his death. In the chaos of a fire at a dam, who would account for some stranger they had only seen a handful of times over the last 3 days? No, but Tony had learned from past experience that the best thing to do was follow along and look for an opening. Any opening. Without a word, Tony complied, letting Orlando guide him through the cacophonous halls. As they walked, he kept his eyes up and alert, but never frantic. He didn't want Orlando to sense his panic. For anybody thundering by, or to any escape route. But the others must have left through some designated route Orlando knew to avoid, and the latter simply did not seem to exist. The dam was too small to allow for such byways. The only option left, then, was physical. Resigned to having to fight, Tony took in a deep breath and began to steel himself, both mentally and physically, for combat. He was almost certain he would not win. Still, he had no choice but to try, because if he didn't, he was almost certain to be shot, his corpse thrown off the dam and into the same waters he'd been fantasizing about only minutes ago. More than even for himself, though, he owed it to Lisa, Kaz, Marshall, Clemson, and every other life these monsters saw as collateral damage in their pursuit of... what? Tony still had no more of a clue what they were piecing together than he had before, only that it was a project that required a truly astronomical quantity of water to pull off. Pickett's confirmation, That it somehow involved multiple dams only confirmed it. Could it be, he wondered, that they actually did have contacts in the USBR, who had men and women of their own, located at dams all across the country? No, he couldn't believe the conspiracy extended quite that far. It would make it too unwieldy. But he didn't doubt that they had at least one or two key players in the Bureau who had pull enough to get names shuffled around, placed on rosters, and inserted where they needed to be in the dam system along the Colorado River.